What happened to A through X?
Super Robot Wars A is on the Game Boy Advance. Super Robot Wars BX is on 3DS. Super Robot Wars Compact is on the Wonder Swan.
Oh, okay. So you mean to tell me it actually is the 25th game in the series?
No, it's actually significantly more than that.
I was like, I'm not sure if you meant that question seriously or not, but you're about to get more of an answer than you expected.
I was going to say, no, I was totally kidding, and it's like, oh, what have I done?
No, do not kid with the Super GBA. Robot Wars naming convention, because you never know.
There is not actually a Super Robot Wars E, to my understanding. There is a Super Robot Wars F and a Super Robot Wars F final. There is no Super Robot Wars G or H. There is Super Robot Wars Impact. There is a Super Robot Wars J. There is a Super Robot Wars K. There is a Super Robot Wars L. There's Super Robot Wars MX. There is no Super Robot Wars N, although you could call it Neo. Could technically count as such. Super Robot Wars, there's no O cross Omega, depending upon how generous you're being. But they usually use the actual Greek Omega symbol for that. Super Robot Wars, there is no P. There's no Q. There is Super Robot Wars R on the GBA. There is no S. There is a Super Robot Wars
Which
T.
Which is kind of surprising, now that I think of it. S is one of the letters I figured they would have had.
Yeah, I think it may have been two on the nose. There's Super Robot Wars T, there's Super Robot Wars, which is on modern systems. There's Super Robot Wars UX on 3DS. There is Super Robot Wars V. Now there's a Super Robot Wars W on the DS. For reasons that make sense.
W for double.
Japanese. Yep. There's a Super Robot Wars X. There is now a Super Robot Wars Y. And there are like six Super Robot Wars Zs. So most of the alphabet is covered.
Okay.
And there's still a bunch of... There's still a bunch of these that I haven't named because there's like some Greek letters and then there's 30 and there's some other stuff in there.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes, but we do not question these Super Robot Wars naming conventions because we're not sure what they are.
I bet you fucking regret asking that now.
The more you know.
The more you know, the less you understand.
Sure.
I should have saved that for the podcast.
Yes, we probably should have, but you know what? Let's start.
Hello and welcome to Q&A Guys, episode 414. I'm your host, Mike Apps. Mike Apps Y. And with me as always.
URL too long, David McBurney, Family Master.
And your man in Japan, Michael Baker, J, Gaiji Monogatari.
And this is Smokin' Joe Gamer, the podcast panelist with RP Gamer, who also live streams on the RP Gamer Twitch channel.
All right. And if you weren't listening as we were live streaming, you missed me trying to name every letter of the alphabet that has a Super Robot Wars to call its own.
I may have believed
that. And it's surprisingly a surprisingly short list of letters that don't have one.
Yeah, I think it's less than five.
So when he was talking about Super Robot Wars Y, I sarcastically said, well, gee, like, what about A through X? And he schooled me. And yes, there are actually more than 25 entries in the series. So,
Yeah, there's so many, especially if you count things that are, like, not main games, like Real Robot Regiment and Super Robot Spirits, which is an N64-only fighting game.
Hey, if we're going to do that, let's count Battle Robot Retsuden.
Yeah, no, that counts. I think the original generation...
It's technically not a Super Robot Wars game, but it is the Super Robot Wars game.
I feel like original generation will acknowledge it at some point.
Yeah. I mean, it has, every series... It includes every series that would be found in the earlier games anyway, so... It was just
I remember... Super Robot, I think Super Robot Wars Ochi Gaiden has the villain from the Game Boy original Super Robot Wars that had no original wow. characters except the villain, Dark Brain.
Though I will say Battle Robot Retsuden did have my favorite justification for having all these characters together.
Mm-hmm.
You ever play that one?
I have not.
So, in the backstory in this one, this is far future Earth, sometime mm-hmm. after the One World Government has broken up into four quadrant governments. But mm-hmm. Back when the world was one government, the defense, the Department of Defense created these giant robots and clone pilots to serve as a defense system mm-hmm. that could be kept in storage and then activated as necessary. And when they were trying to decide what designs to use and what personality templates to use for the clone pilots, as it turns out, literally half of the Department of Defense was huge fans of obscure 1990s battle robot anime.
Mm-hmm. That happens.
So they simply lifted all the designs and personality templates from their favorite series, from actually mid-80s. It must have been mid-80s for that one.
So yeah, Battle Robot Retsudan, the one that I can find in a Super Nintendo game.
Yes, it is. Okay, it's yeah. Like I said, it's kind of the Super Robot Wars game. It came out before Super Robot Wars was officially a thing. It plays a little differently because it had hex grids, among other things.
Yeah,
but otherwise,
it was the same developer.
Oh yeah, it's even by the same guys. It's made by most of the same people.
Winkysoft developed. Van Presto published. It actually seems to postdate the very original Super Robot Wars on Game Boy. Because it seems to be
It still feels a lot more like the later games than the Game Boy game original did.
Oh, absolutely. So. Like the other thing to keep in mind is that a lot of things have been adopted into Super Robot Wars that were not officially Super Robot Wars at the time. Most notably, there's a character who shows up in like a bunch of them, named Gilliam Yeager.
Mm-hmm.
And Gilliam's thing is that he's like, there's a bunch of Super Robot Wars universes, but Gilliam is the one character who is, it's always the same Gilliam Yeager. But he originates from a game called Hero Senki Project Olympus, which was
that sounds like a crossover title.
Yeah, it was a crossover title. I think it had some. I want to say that it had more like Ultraman representation.
Quite possibly.
And
I mean, you said Hero Senki?
Yeah, Hero Senki Project Olympus.
Yeah, that's a commonly used title format for a lot of the anime crossover games.
Yeah. And I'm looking at the box.
Oh, yeah, I would believe a lot of Ultraman representation there.
But yeah, Gilliam Yeager just got adopted into being like just full. A Super Robot Wars character. He is a key part of the original generation's games. Also, his theme song is incredible. I'm gonna just drop that in Wheels' Discord.
Sure.
But you can all bask in that. Okay, but yeah, we should probably actually answer a question.
Yeah.
Why is Kronos a jerk? Someone answer that to me.
Well, I mean this is very well supported by mythology, considering several of the things that Kronos did in mythology.
Yeah, are you talking like the Lord of the Titans Kronos?
Yes, that one.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, the character in Hades 2 that is based on the guy who literally swallowed his own children whole, one by one, as they were born.
Honestly, probably has a lot fewer redeeming qualities.
They just referenced that before this boss battle started, actually.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, as a titan and as a personification of one of the fundamental elements of the universe. Yeah, he is. What's right here? An implacable jerk. So, I mean, that's about the only characterization you can go with it. There's no way of personalizing him properly. Mm. So his only place in the mythology is to have been an implacable jerk who was so concerned about being supplanted as ruler of the universe that he just ate his own children. Mm. Live. As infants. Mostly swallowed whole, apparently. Ugh. Considering that later Zeus killed him and they all came out. Actually, oh no, what was it? Uranus. Okay, what was it? Uranus or Kronos? Getting mixed up. This happened multiple times in ancient Greek, in the deep Greek mythology, so. Mm. Okay.
So did they actually cut
it? Yeah, any question about Greek mythology of why is this character like this, it's pretty much going to be because the Greeks' preferred method of creating mythology was to create the most dysfunctional soap opera ever imagined.
Oh, God.
And with characters who had no stake in actually being human.
So in the mythology, did they actually cut up Kronos and scatter him around Tartarus?
Possibly. I know they cut him open to let the kids out.
Pleasant.
So, yeah. I mean, yeah.
Did Hades actually have children, or did they make them up for, or maybe repurpose?
Oddly enough, Hades had one son that was mentioned in one myth by name, and that's the name that they gave to the hero from the game Hades.
Okay.
And there's literally nothing else known about this guy in mythology.
Interesting.
So
easy to use.
Yeah. So yeah, Cronus was the one who was killed by Zeus.
Yep. And that's why everyone was like, "Well, I guess we have to deal with Zeus for the rest of time."
No, I mean technically, Zeus was supposed to have a child who would supplant him in the same way. It was supposed to be the child of this one particular woman who he had just slept with. And when he was told this, he got very concerned, and he swallowed her whole.
Well, I suppose that beats swallowing the child, I guess.
And then a little while later, he had the world's worst migraine. He had to literally bash his own skull open with a rock, and then Athena came out of his head.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, now that we've learned about a little more about Greek mythology than we all knew before, let's see, there's a recent article on Automaton West about Ben Presto running out of the alphabet to name them. Next Super Robot Wars games. They're chill about it though, since they can just use two letters at the same time, like they did with UX or MX. Yep. As brought up within this, the Ben Presto used to have like a whole line of crossover games.
They still do. I mean, it's one of their random things every few years they'll come out with a new one. They're not making them as often as they used to, but they're still around.
Yeah. I want to say the character Fighter Roar from Wars Gaiden also hailed from some of those. The Compata Heroes games.
Yeah.
Which is why whenever you see him in those games, he is an absolutely tiny unit, because he is just a man with like space armor.
Yep. Space armor and the will to punch giant robots in the nuts.
As should be the case for anyone who will be fighting alongside Ultraman.
Yes. I mean, choose your own definition of nuts. Because that guy certainly is nuts.
Okay, it's the Fire Miners bringing up. So it seems Silent Hill F continues the tradition of joke endings. I've already asked about why so few games, especially comedy games, tried to build themselves around Silent Hill dog type of endings. But is it just me, or does it feel like it's easier to write an antagonist who is truly malicious than an antagonist who is annoying? Their prime motivation is their utter stupidity. I'm not talking about mundane evils, their crimes of superstructure. I think a lot of times what you'll end up with is that, like, people don't want to deal with annoying. Like, stupid is funny, annoying is annoying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, annoying serves its purpose for, like, side villains or minor antagonists.
Mm-hmm.
Scorpion Army. But not as satisfying to beat them up, but not as satisfying to have them as the big bad.
Yeah, and if you're going for comedy, like, someone who is like whose entire plan is just fucking stupid will probably piss people off less. They'll just think it's funny. But yeah, I'm thinking of like villains in comedy games, and like the first thing I'm coming up with is like LeChuck from Monkey Island. Like, yeah, he's menacing. His goal is bizarre, and could only make sense in Monkey Island logic. But, you know, he is also just meant to be patently absurd. Like, at least one of the games makes a joke about him having escaped from being trapped in ice because Guybrush forgot to shave him and his flame beard melted him out. Like, he's just silly. He's just ridiculous. But I think in an almost... so in dramatic structures, you will often have comic relief to allow for the catharsis of emotion that is less scary and negative and just upsetting than pure drama, so that the viewer doesn't, like, you know, become emotionally dulled from the drama. Like, you insert comedy relief. I think there's something to be said for essentially dramatic relief in a comedy. You add something that gives you an excuse to care about the proceedings, and the villain is often the dramatic relief in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
And it's by no means necessary, just like there are works of good drama that have no meaningful comedy, but it is often, you know, like a story with no stakes and no villain is hard to pace out and reach an ending. And, you know, most comedy games or movies or books or whatever, they're comedies, but they're still trying to have a narrative structure, and the villain often lends those some structure that they might be lacking otherwise. So I think that's why you often see villains that aren't just jokes.
I'm trying to think of some things here, and my brain keeps going back to comparisons to Snidely Whiplash and the old like the old Western serials where the villain was technically like the guy who controlled all the loans at the bank and was trying to foreclose on the farm or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I can think of, like, what was that one that from Compile recently? They rebooted one of their series, and it was all about finding a magical curry recipe.
Oh, Mado Monogatari.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, that one, it was, like, the villain was basically a corporate parody of the most popular curry restaurant chain in Japan. So that kind of thing where it's almost like a ridiculous pest. I've seen that one a few times where it was definitely being played for laughs and parody. It wasn't really high stakes as they're not planning to take over the world or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But it was very often like have to save your town, have to save your shop, have to save the country from really low quality curry products. That kind of thing. I guess it's
Yeah, important. Yeah, very important there. But yeah, so I mean, that's something you'll see in a lot in a lot of Meister games as well. Some of the Atelier-like variants, you'll find villains that are really not that villainous per se, but they're definitely antagonistic towards whatever you would think of as a happy ending. Or, for that matter, oh, Stardew Valley, didn't they have a corporate villain in that one? Sort of?
That seems
it's like
accurate.
Yeah. Like, I remember seeing that you could get an ending where you decided to side with the corporation trying to buy out the local store. But yeah, I mean, you can take that route for villainy as well, and often play it for laughs, just because it's meant to be a parody of something in real life, and so the humor makes it easier to get it past the legal team, in some ways.
And I've been reminded of something thanks to friend of the podcast, Tam, that we do have to discuss.
I
don't wanna.
He's got it.
Nah.
What are we discussing?
EA has been purchased in a leveraged buyout by private equity. A few vectors here. One, this, by all appearances, is an unserviceable debt. The private equity purchase is $55 billion, like, with $20 billion of debt being pushed onto Electronic Arts itself. Their, like, operating revenue, if it was all spent servicing the debt, would still take, like, 10 years. Whatever's still the company is going to get gutted.
What is the point of this?
I think, two or three competing masters here. You have, like, the Saudi royal family that has financed a significant portion of this, who sees it as yet another way to try to buy cultural relevance. Like, they've been doing that a lot. There's the current Riyadh comedy show that got people kicked out for, like, even mentioning the, you know, awful slavery and shit. You've got like WWE, SNK, like, they've been trying to buy cultural relevance for Evo, like, they've been trying to buy cultural relevance for quite a while. Just anything to launder the reputation. Like, that's their reason for being here. You've also got, like, a variety of the usual private equity ghouls, including the U.S. president's son-in-law.
Jared Kushner.
Jared Kushner.
Also, the sheer amount of customer metadata.
There's a fair amount of that, but I don't think that that would be enough to make this, like, they'll take that and use it, but, like,
it's just, like, icing on the cake, but it's a factor.
Yeah, there's, like, what'll ultimately end up having to happen is a bunch of studios will get shut down, other ones will get sold off for parts, DICE might end up being sold off for parts, Tiburon might get sold off for parts, but, you know, ultimately, like, a bunch of places are going to get shuttered. I'd suspect BioWare will be first on the chopping block.
I don't think they're going to be first, but they're definitely going to be early.
Yeah.
Like, they'll be in the first round. Motive... I'm forgetting if the Motive or Massive. Massive. One of them's Ubisoft, one of them's EA. I think Motive is EA. They won't be first on the chopping block, but they will end up getting killed by this. But yeah, like, ultimately this is just a this will destroy this company. There's very little other ways out of this. A few people will become fabulously wealthy. Thousands of people will lose their jobs. And
it's a leveraged buyout. Yeah,
it's a leveraged buyout to the tune of like 35 billion of actual cash being spent out, and 20 billion being stacked onto the company, a debt it cannot possibly hope to pay in the rate that they're going to be forced to pay it. So yeah, I think it is ultimately like, because like what you'll see in the near term is likely Saudi princes pulling strings to get the FIFA license back onto EA's football game and soccer game again. You'll see even more abusive versions of the Ultimate Team feature to try to extract some short-term cash. The sports division will probably end up getting sold off or spun off last, because it will probably maintain individual profitability. Something will keep it running, but every other division will probably be slowly shut down or sold off.
It's basically how much they can force monetization and even more monetization into the games than they already have tried.
I mean, there's no way for them to make up that money.
No, but that's how they're going to try and get it. Yeah.
They're going to do it, but like...
Because they always believe it's possible even when it's not anymore.
Yeah, depending on the actual terms, like, they probably have somewhere between 5 and 10 years to pay down the debt, and that is impossible. There is simply they would need to rapidly expand the amount of money they are making, and there's simply no money to do. There's simply no market to expand to. No properties to exploit, this is a company that is contracting, not expanding. It is as large as it's ever going to be. So yeah, there's no way for them to increase their margins enough to make this make sense. So yeah, say your goodbyes to EA. They won't be here in 10 years.
I'll be lucky to be here
if even that.
Yeah. Yes, I am. That's why I said in 10 years. I was simply putting the furthest out possibility.
So bringing this up on the RP Gamer Discord, Paul said that part of this whole thing is also completely illegal in Canada.
Yeah. Yes, there are ways to stop leverage buyouts, but people with money don't want them to go away in the US, so they don't.
Yeah,
that's really it. There's nothing you can do to. There's no sugarcoating that. It's just like, as it turns out, the people who have made a lot of money doing leveraged buyouts use that money to make sure leveraged buyouts stay a thing. Yeah. The rich get richer. So that's a miserable discussion that we will be having several times throughout the next few years as we watch different parts of them get shuttered and thousands of people lose their jobs.
Yeah.
And some of the people from BioWare who have recently left have already said, yeah, this is... BioWare is, like, very early on cut, probably.
Oh, yeah. Like, the thing that will probably kill them fastest is just that they haven't spent, they like Mass Effect 5 isn't in full production yet. It's still in pre-production, so it's very easy to kill it.
Veilguard
is irrelevant to this question. Like, Veilguard underperformed, and that's why Mass Effect 5 is in such dire straits. But, like, if Mass Effect 5 was in full production, it would be much harder to kill. It doesn't really matter what Veilguard's doing.
Well, no, but that was one of the things brought up, is Veilguard didn't do well. Anthem was a complete flop. Dragon Age 3 wasn't exactly bad. It was pretty decent, but it wasn't like...
Dragon Age 3 sold 10 million units.
Okay, that's way more than I thought it would have.
It disgusting numbers.
But it didn't review well in the end.
Doesn't matter. That's a lot of
extraordinarily
copies.
Well. It actually reviewed extremely well. It got the most Game of the Year awards of that year.
Inquisition did well, but Veilguard did not. Yeah.
Yeah, Veilguard definitely did not.
I think retroactively people have a negative opinion of Dragon Age 3, but at the time, I definitely remember it being huge.
Well, I enjoyed that game, yeah.
I think Wheels has it right. A lot of people really liked it at the time, but now you're getting a lot of people who are playing it, you know, much later in the life cycle, and it's like, this may not have been as good as people said.
Sure.
It
may bang.
Yeah, but it's an irrelevant question in this context. Like, the actual things to point at are things like Mass Effect 4, Anthem. Like, Anthem did 5 million units. If they had kept pushing it, they might have been able to make it work, but it was too little too late. In a world where it didn't launch in the middle of, right before COVID, if, like, Anthem Next had been able to not get murdered by COVID, then maybe there'd be a different story on that game, because a lot of people did end up purchasing it, and you can turn these things around if you try hard enough. But we'll never know what that world
looks like. Fallout game is still going.
Yeah, somehow Fallout 76 is still going, and there is a dedicated fan base that thinks it's good. You can turn these around if you're bullheaded enough. But yeah, there was.
Or you somehow managed to accidentally start a class war between early adopters and later.
It was paid players versus
paid players. Yeah. Players.
But yeah. But yeah, you can turn these around. Like, in a world where COVID hadn't happened when it did, you might have seen someone. There might have been, like, some kind of Cinderella story for Anthem that didn't end up happening. In a world where Dragon Age, the Veilguard, had been allowed to 100% restart development when they stripped out the... when they stripped out the live service elements, you might have been able to do something, but ultimately a cavalcade of errors have prevented us from seeing what that will be. And yeah, like, I think that we will hear about BioWare being shuttered sometime within the next calendar. Like, but by this time next year, there will probably not be a BioWare to talk about. Because they've already moved, like, it was essentially always in a precarious though not fatal position, because everyone after Veilguard came out had either been pushed to another had either left or been pushed to another studio, because technically Mass Effect 5 is in pre-production. If this buyout was happening 2 years from now, it might have spared them long enough to get Mass Effect 5 out, because, again, it would be far enough into production that there would be a concern about how much money had already been spent. But at this point, like, the operation, the loss is, you know, we paid, like, 50 people for 6 months. They don't care.
And I don't think the next Dragon Age is even in pre-production.
not. They only have one team. There were 50 people working at BioWare, and now there won't be any.
Yeah, so BioWare's pretty much done. I did see about the layoffs at BioWare.
Yeah, they had some layoffs, and more damningly, a bunch of internal transfers to other places.
So, at some point in the future, could Dragon Age or Mass Effect, could that be taken over by another publisher or developer, you think? Or
theoretically, they could. Institutionally, okay. EA doesn't like to.
Right. Okay, that sounds about right.
We're talking about a situation where EA might end up getting stripped for parts in the next 2 to 3 years.
Exactly.
I think more than likely what you'd end up seeing is that someone buys those IPs.
But the reverse side is if no one buys the IPs.
Someone will buy them. Whether it's someone who has the money or interest in doing anything other than collecting money off of the games on existing storefronts is a different question. But there will be a purchaser for the IPs. The Mass Effect Legendary Edition did good business. Like, they did good money off of that. Like, someone will pay to get the IP, control of the IP, to essentially just collect money off of that and ancillary products.
Just rentier stuff.
Yeah. I can't really foresee any of the companies that actually have the capacity and expertise to make a game of the scale and size of Dragon Age or Mass Effect actually biting on the IP. So I suspect that's much more likely what ends up happening to them.
Well, we know Star Enix won't bite on it.
I don't know what that's in reference to.
When Square Enix sold off all their Western studios to Embracer Group.
Yeah, I mean, they barely wanted those to begin with. Once the Avengers came out and did poor numbers, they were just kind of like, why do we even still have these? they got a hold of them in that Eidos buyout. I forget if that, I feel like that was attached to something else they actually wanted. As opposed to them.
Tomb Raider.
Well, I don't think they
sold that too, though.
Yeah, I don't think they terribly wanted
that much.
Yeah, I don't think they ever terribly wanted that either. I don't know how much they did. But let's see. Okay.
I do remember Eidos doing all the work for the Final Fantasy PC port way back in the day, because I owned that copy.
Yeah. I did too, yeah.
They were not the same. They definitely. Like, that was, in as much as anything, that was as close as their relationship was at the time. Okay. They acquired Eidos, the parent company. Yeah, I think it was primarily to staff up their European branch, since they didn't have much of note there at the time. So they end up buying Eidos, which is what gives them control of Tomb Raider and Deus Ex for a time. But yeah, they sold off that entire branch. I guess they didn't feel like keeping tabs on that set of developers, but yeah. Check the chat. Okay, so some quick ones. What is happening to my Twitch tab?
I'm just kind of surprised how fast this leverage buyout went.
I'm sure that it's been in the works for months, and it's just that it leaked a few days before it actually had the ink signed on it.
Yeah.
Like, any business deal of this scale has been in negotiation for probably at least a year, but probably longer.
Tam is driving.
I am.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's fine.
I heard a turn signal.
Wait, so who owns Tomb Raider now? Is it Embracer Group?
No, it's one of the Embracer spinoffs.
Yeah, okay. One of the Embracer spinoffs who then sublicensed it to Amazon, who may have some sort of option to purchase it.
Okay.
Oh, please, God,
Wasn't there a company just recently in the news getting, like, blasted for using AI in some, like, remasters of some of the older ones? One kind of fall under it. Like, AI voiceovers? I remember seeing those articles.
The French dub in the Tomb Raiders 1 through 3 seems to have had some of it. Like, the dispute seems to be that Lara Croft's French voice actress says that they used AI, and I think someone from the company fired back that no, we just had, like, we found some old recordings and cleaned them up. I don't know. These recordings would be well over a quarter century old.
They actually just came out and verified, like, yesterday or the day before, it was indeed AI recordings. They are going to remove them from the game.
Good.
Well, at least they're going to take them out.
Yep. Let's see. Okay, I'm looking up who actually owns Tomb Raider right now. Okay, so yeah, it seems that... Yeah, okay, so... Crystal Dynamics and Amazon Games previously announced collaboration to develop and publish. So yeah, so technically Amazon does not own it yet, although it sounds like they kind of want to. The hilarious thing about this like Amazon Prime Video TV series is that it is now on like its third writer's room. Like they spent millions and millions of dollars multiple times trying to get people to produce scripts for a Tomb Raider TV show and somehow produced nothing that they felt was filmable, which is... I don't know how you do that. Like,
how does that happen?
A thing that I think about a lot is that if you had made a Tomb Raider series in 1999, it would be like a Xena-style first-run syndication show. There would be 100 episodes of it, and it would have been produced very cheaply and be remembered fondly as stupid but fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
Now we are on our third writer's room for a series that is going to cost $100 million to produce 8 episodes, and everyone is going to be like, this is miserable.
I'm just talking about Amazon Video, there will not be another season of the Wheel of Time live action series.
Yeah, I saw that. Good. I wasn't surprised by that, but I saw
I kind of got into it. It's just that the problem is the third season decided to skip the entire third book and go right to the fourth book. So Rand does not go to the Stone of Tyr, he goes right to the Aiel Waste. It's like, well,
dude,
no.
16 books. Something would have to be removed.
I know.
Many things would have to be removed.
But I mean, you don't remove an entire book, you just remove large sections of any given book.
I'm so glad I dropped that series at book 8.
Yeah, I think that's about... I remember it was 6 or 7 where they just went on a 1,000-page side bit about some of the side villains. Some of the books...
I don't remember. I remember book 8 was the one where one of the heroes that was summoned by the Horn ended up, like, actually being, like, sort of brought back to life type of thing, and she was falling in love with one of the other characters that was from the village, and I gave up at that point. I was like, I'm done.
Okay, well, what happened was...
I don't need to know.
Okay.
No. We already went into deep dive of Super Robot Wars. We're not going into...
Yeah, Tam, you missed it.
This is a deep dive that will take up the entire podcast for the next 4 weeks.
You missed my punishment for asking a sarcastic question about Super Robot Wars.
Sometimes sarcasm doesn't pay.
It does not.
Okay, I promise I will not rant. I am curious what the question was.
Oh, he was talking about Super Robot Wars Y, and I was like, well, gee, what the hell happened to A through X? And he proceeded to tell me, oh, no, there are absolutely many, many Super Robot Wars games.
For most of those letters. I think
for most of those letters have a game associated
with them. Three or four letters of the alphabet that don't have the Super Robot Wars game.
Yeah. Now, my personal favorite question on this is someone was like, oh, what's the next game? Z has like, no, they already made Z. It's five games.
Yeah, there's a lot of Z games.
Oh, wait, they skipped... Hold on. They did Z and then did Y? What? Okay, now
you
I'm
think
really...
think there's logic here? What are you talking
I thought
about?
They were in in alphabetical order.
Nope.
I told you what game. I told you what systems most of these were on, and half of them were Game Boy Advance.
I kind of tuned you out. I'm sorry.
No. I have done dissertations on the RP Gamer Discord about Super Robot Wars, just original generations, not even going into all the expanded games. So yeah, no, I'm good.
Okay.
Because if we really want me to do the dissertation, I will talk about Namco X Capcom. Because that is related to Super Robot Wars.
So is Super Robot Wars a sequel to some series called Robot Wars?
No.
They've never not been Super, is what you're telling me.
They've always been
You're talking
super.
About that old game show where they built robots to beat each other, right?
I don't know.
Was there a Super Robot Wars on Super Nintendo?
Yes.
Nope, there was
four of them.
Oh, yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, that's good. That's nice. But there was none on NES, or if there were...
There is one on NES.
But it was already called Super Robot Wars on the regular Nintendo Entertainment System.
Yeah, it was Super Robot Wars 2.
Okay.
The first one was actually on Game Boy.
Okay. I'm also playing Tony Hawk right now, and I'm really struggling on these Tony Hawk 4 levels because I don't remember how to do most of these freaking goals.
I'm just playing Super Robot Wars.
Like 3, I had mostly memorized from playing on GameCube, but 4, I'm just really confused. So that's why I kind of fell off of this. Sorry.
Why are you not playing Hades?
I could. I thought Hades would require more mental energy, and I thought Tony Hawk would be something to just relax with and just do random tricks.
No, that's a good time for like playing your favorite weapon or just messing around with something new, not caring about actually completing it.
Yeah. Can we talk about Hades too? Because we've all, well, two of us have been playing it, right?
I have not played my copy yet.
I wasn't going to say his name, but yeah, I made it to the fourth boss twice and could not beat them. But since you already spoiled it, yes, Kronos was the fourth boss, and I could not beat him.
Are we saying?
Oh no, I mean, I was just saying we all went into long form on the details of his horrific cannibalism.
Yes.
In mythology.
Are you saying?
I did not know which number of boss he might be. I just assumed he probably was a boss because you know Kronos. It's kind of his position in the mythology.
Were you saying that the fourth boss is Kronos is a spoiler when everyone is constantly saying death to Kronos?
I don't know. Also, I know the game was in early access for a while, so it's probably not a spoiler at this point.
Not really.
Okay.
I mean, if you make a game based on Greek mythology, you're going to have to assume that you're going to have to kill Kronos at some point, because that's just the kind of character he is.
Is Zagreus actually from Greek mythology?
I think we covered this. Zagreus is the name of the son of Hades, who is mentioned in like one myth only.
Okay.
Almost no details given. It's just that he is known to have existed in the mythology somehow, with no backing in any writings that have survived the last 2,000 years.
Okay.
And so they just named the hero of the game after him because, hey, the name's there.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, it's a legit...
Like, we can do pretty much anything we want with him and it'll still be accurate.
Because no one knows!
They've done a great job with the story, though. That's the best part of Hades, really, is the story itself, but also the way it's presented. You know, I think there's good pacing where you get a little tidbits between runs and they don't swamp you with lore dumps all over the place, you know?
They don't even really tell you what's going on when you start the game, and they slowly reveal it over time.
Well, that's it, because I had thought about doing a live stream or doing a YouTube video right from the beginning, and then I'm like, no, I don't know how much story there's going to be. And then, no, it goes right into the first run. And there's like, well, I don't know how much story content there's going to be after the first run, and there wasn't. And then I said, well, let me just get really far into the game till I kind of master it, and then I can put on a more entertaining show, you know? So, yeah, now I unlock more content, more builds, and that's like, okay, now I feel like I could confidently do a stream or a YouTube video.
I'm very good punchy guy.
Yeah. And,
Poncho.
Of course, my TV is 120 hertz, so I tell you, the game is great. It's a gorgeous game, and the frame rate is so smooth if you have the right TV or monitor for it. Very impressed with it. Let's see. Let me load it up, because I can give you some more information about how far I've gotten.
Is there actually any questions this week?
Oh, no, there's always questions. There's
more Fireminer questions.
We answered like three of them already.
Fireminers had plenty to say in the chat.
Oh, okay. All right, so I've done 19 total runs in Hades 2. And made it to the fourth boss twice already. So like the original Hades, it probably took me, I don't even know, at least 50 runs before I could beat Hades himself. And of course, then we all know it goes on after that. Then they want you to do it 10 more times. So I did get to a point where I could more consistently get through runs. But this is like,
this is different though, because there's two.
Yes, and that's the thing. So I don't know that I would say that this is easier or harder. It's just different. Yeah. Like,
I mean,
I feel like there's more variety and like there's more meaningful upgrades and there's variety in builds. But I'm also not seeing as many boons as of yet, which could probably change. And I like the weapons for the most part, so they're different. So yeah, it's just a kind of a different game in a good way.
Yeah, I did a clean run much faster than I ever did in Hades 1, but I guess from all that experience in Hades 1, I found the weapon I like, which is the little magic wand, range wand things, and then I just kept doing runs with that. And kept like tweaking builds, finding the boons I liked, and kept looking for those.
Yeah,
and it works out. But there's a lot of differences from the first game. Like, one of the interesting things in the first game is you could get, what do they call them, the keepsakes?
And yeah,
those were honestly not that interesting in the first game, because a lot of them were just, oh, this god will show up more likely to show up, which is useful for making the trying to get the build you want to get, but meh. None of the ones in this game do that. They're all different, they all have interesting effects, and they can all definitely change a lot about how your run goes. And you can also still change them like between areas, so you can switch things up in the middle of a run, because some of them are like, oh, it'll heal you to full after each room up to a certain limit, so once you beat an area you can ditch that one if it's used up and switch to something else.
Yeah, so Ghost on you need to want to get rid of as soon as it uses up all the healing. Right, and then, but you still have Lucky Tooth, which is important because that acts as like a death defiance. But see, now you can sometimes get armor. So one of the keepsakes you get it from Arachne is Silken Sash.
It's one of the best.
So gain 30 armor while you have at least one armor, gain +3 after each location. Now it becomes worthless if you run out of armor, but That's on you for
there's
you know,
ways
not,
to get armor back.
Not
too,
playing good enough.
Get
yes.
It, get it going again.
Yes. And then now you have mana for using powered up attacks. So there is a keepsake silver wheel that gives you extra mana. But now you have this whole kind of tarot card system to set up different builds. And one of them is called the Unseen. You restore 6 mana every second. So you have these cards and each one has a point value. And then you can increase your maximum capacity and mix and match. And it's actually a really neat system for just coming up with different builds.
Yes, and no, it's not deck building, in case anyone is averse to that.
No, I don't like deck building, and I'm telling you, this is like, okay, it's just cards. It's not, you don't build a deck, you don't play a card game.
It's just like, just... oh, they're like tarot cards.
Yes, with point values.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, Hades 2, this is great. And yeah, I'm playing it right now as we speak, and like they said, on Switch 2, it's 1080p, 120 FPS, and yeah, this frame rate is so smooth on my TV. But what's interesting is that if I, like, when I check my TV settings, my TV claims that it's outputting at 1440p and 120 hertz. If I turn off 120 hertz and force it into 4K, then my TV says, oh yeah, it's 4K, and you can clearly see that it's 60 hertz instead, it's 60 FPS. But in any case, my point is it always looks gorgeous and it always has good performance. But like, don't be turned off by the fact that they said, oh, it's only 1080p. It's like, no, this like looks flipping amazing. And I want to say Hades 1 didn't have a specific resolution. I think that just scaled up to whatever your screen was anyways. So these just the art direction is just off the charts here. Just so much detail. Yeah, just really impressive.
By the way, I am home.
Oh, you made home. Good.
Yay.
Wait a minute. Who's this? Hold on. Hera. Oh, Hera is in this game. Okay. Well, my first time getting a Hera bone.
I didn't spoil that for you.
You did not.
Yeah, so that is the other thing is in addition to going to the underworld, and it's different areas of the underworld, it's not like anything... There were areas in Hades 1, you also go the opposite way, presumably up to Olympus. And I think, from what I've seen playing the game, it looks like you have to do a certain number of successful runs of each to roll credits.
Yeah, it really seems like it's kind of two games in one, huh? Like twice as much content, if not more, compared to the first game.
Yeah, and the overworld areas so far have been pretty interesting. Doing some neat things. I don't know if you've gotten... Did you beat the Cyclops yet?
No.
Okay. You'll see.
I'm just doing... Like you said, I'm just doing a fun run where it's like, I don't care if I die or not, because every run is meaningful in these games because you get more currency and you have meaningful upgrades. So this is roguelike done right. Yeah. I love it. Yeah, so then it's kind of funny, though, because when I opened the door to be able to go to the surface, the first time I do it, of course, you die, just like what happens in the first game when you get to the surface. And, of course, the NPCs are kind of just like you knew that was going to happen, right? Like, what did you think was going to happen, you moron? You know?
I think we put everyone to sleep.
I think we did. Nah. Yeah.
I know. No, I'm still here.
Okay, good.
I'm grinding mindless levels in Super Robot Wars Y on auto.
I don't know what that means.
I'm exploring through
it.
I'm exploring through random areas of Atelier Wrestleria, whatever you pronounce it, Wrestleriana. So.
Is that the new one?
The new one.
Okay. Is it good?
That's pretty good. Does
it play like Yumiya?
It plays a lot more like it plays a lot more like Sophie too. It's definitely not a parkour free-for-all on this one.
Okay.
Ryza, it plays more like Ryza 2 and 3 in some ways. Smaller areas, but there's adventure stuff like swinging over things and voiding obstacles.
Yumiya was all over the map.
literally all over the map. It was quite fun, but...
Yeah, I played the demo of Yumiya. I was going to get it at some point, and I've mentioned multiple times before that I tried to play Atelier Ryza on first on a PC that couldn't quite run it, and then Steam Deck couldn't quite run it, and it turns out it's just not a well-optimized port, in my opinion.
Yeah, don't trust Gust for anything involving a PC port. So
what I'd like to do is probably, I think they're going to release the whole trilogy for PS5, or maybe they already did, so I think I was going to get that version. Oh, okay. Yeah, I'd like to just get the whole trilogy in one package if that becomes available. Yeah, that'll be great.
Yeah, just don't try to marathon that series, because you will get burned out so fast. Just play one, enjoy it, try something completely different for a while, and come back to it later.
Okay.
Play the Dusk trilogy at some point.
Okay.
Oh, the Dusk games as well. The Dusk games are really good. The Mysterious games are generally not as good, but Sophie 2 is actually a lot better than Sophie 1.
Oh, this is funny, real quick. So in Hades 2, you run into Arachne, which is the spider, and you can get animal familiars, so you have a pet frog that can join you on your runs and do stuff for you. But of course, the spider is like, what is that? Get that away from me. He's going to eat me. Help me. Save me. This is Phrynos. Phrynos is a friend, in fact. He means you no harm. Your stash of flies, however, that may need to safeguard. So, yeah. He's not going to eat you, but he might eat the flies that you caught. Yeah. Oh, so that's the thing. So when you run into Arachne, her boons will give you extra armor and some other bonus effect. So like Emerald Dress, don a plus 50 armor outfit that makes you restore 2 health whenever you exit a location. That could be helpful. Like if you have missing health when you take it, then it'll heal it. And then you're not worried about losing it because you have armor. Yeah. But then there's also don an outfit that makes you lose 30% less mana. Okay. Okay. I'm going to pick that. So anyway, yeah, continue. I didn't mean to interrupt the Atelier discussion.
No worries. But no, the new game plays a lot like a combination of Ryza and Nelki from, which was the previous massive crossover All the Girls Together game.
Mm. Okay.
Oh yeah, I like that one.
Is this another crossover one?
It is a massive crossover one, which is why I'm comparing it to Nelki in the first place. Nelki also had a town management side, which is going to play into things here, I think. But its actual battle side, like exploration side, was very lacking, to just put it mildly. So this game plays a lot more like Ryza in terms of just going out and doing stuff. Which is nice.
Well, that does sound like a better crossover too. Like,
yeah,
make it play like the actual games.
Yeah. No, I mean, you're gonna have to specify which actual games you would mean here. But Nelki had some resemblances to the earlier games, especially in the you send people out and stuff happens that just didn't hold up very well in modern formats, and so it actually played a lot more like some of the smartphone games where you send the characters out and then they're presented with a series of events that they walk through. And you have to
I honestly thought it was a mobile game first and it got ported.
Yeah. No, I mean, I can see how they got to that kind of thing because it's basically an expanded version of how Atelier Marie and Ellie worked in some ways. It was not very satisfying coming off of the Dusk and even the Mysterious series. So it was pre-Ryza though. Yeah. I don't think Ryza was in that. The Ryza wasn't in that one. I remember, Nelki was early enough that they actually had they had Gust-chan, Gust's anthropomorphic character from the Neptunia games, in that game.
and she was just randomly giving meta commentary. And at one point, she congratulated the Arland heroines, Rorona and Totori and Marudu, on their new arrival. And they're like, "What are you talking about?" And she was like, "Oops, you'll find out soon." And that was right before Lulua, the fourth Arland game, was announced. So, things like that.
Ooh.
So yeah, this is it's looking to be a fun one.
I think I broke his brain.
Yeah. Other than that,
still playing.
Should we talk about Dragon Quest any?
Oh yeah, see, I haven't played a lot of Dragon Quest games, and I am finding out now that some people have very strong opinions about Dragon Quest VII.
Yeah.
Oh yes. Yes, I do.
Yes. Okay, so long story short, Dragon Quest VII was highly experimental for PlayStation. Yes, and that too. I'm sure that you're not talking about Dragon Quest VII, but yes, that would work here too. But the original game just dragged on massively. 3DS remake actually streamlined things a lot.
Still drags.
It does not. It's
yeah, but I mean, it's a feature of the storytelling mode. Everything is vignette style. There's no sign of a centralized plot for over half the game. Which has its merits. It also has its problems. I mean, there's a reason why when I did the impression of Dragon Quest VII for 3DS, I made a specific mention for how long it took me to get to Altrade's Abbey. Because just to give experienced players of the series an idea of how much it had been streamlined, because it was like, it took me just over 18 hours of gameplay to get to that point. And in the original game, this would have been like 40 or more.
It still took me like 100 hours to beat the game.
PlayStation or 3DS version?
I never beat the PlayStation 3DS.
Oh.
I think I fell into the issue of I have a strong feeling. Well, I mean, part of it is I tend to play Dragon Quest games when I'm trying to fall asleep, because grinding battles is very soothing, and I tend to fall asleep playing So, but
so some of that 100 hours may just be snooze bloat, is what you're saying.
Usually I did close my 3DS so it would go into sleep mode.
Mm-hmm.
But,
not always.
But some of it is just me, you know, grinding, you know, levels and jobs, because that's what I enjoy. But I never beat the original one, because I think I ended up stuck the same place as my wife actually got stuck, which is missing the one fragment in a jar in the first busker camp.
Yep. Well, because I mean, that's why they came up with the radar for the 3DS, is so you can actually locate these things more easily.
Yeah, because I ended up being like one fragment short, and I just... Oh, no, actually, never mind. It wasn't the fragment. I remember now. It was the Cloud Jin boss.
Mm-hmm.
Where you had the two cities on either side of a ravine.
Yep.
Yeah. That the boss for that stage is the one that I got stuck on, and I just couldn't beat it in the original.
Yep. So, yeah, I'm worried about discussions of how to further streamline the game, because, again, the way the game is composed of vignettes, it's going to be difficult to remove stuff further without it turning into, like, a metaphorical Jenga game. The three islands I know have been removed. Or were they here? I remember looking them up just to see which ones they were, because I never knew any of the Japanese, or any of the English names for these. But, like, the first, one of them, Providence, is probably the easiest one to remove, just because it was a generic, like, the town has a holy symbol, and the
the demons trick people into breaking it so that they can invade, and you have to put the thing back together. So it's a nice story, but it's fairly easy to see how you could remove it. One of the other islands, Grindel, is literally where the world tree is in the game. So it's like a guaranteed source of world leaf and world leaf water, or soul, whichever name you use for the item.
Yggdrasil Dew.
Okay, thank you, world tree Dew. Yggdrasil Dew. Yeah, so that makes it, I mean, unless they find a, or unless they start selling it later in the game, that's going to be a supply issue there. And the other one that got removed was apparently, I remember this town is being called Rococo, because it was incredibly garishly decorated. Wonderful, bizarre architecture, one of the weirdest looking places that was nominally human in the game. It was also stuck in a stable time loop.
Yeah.
I do remember the time
loop. Long scenario.
Yeah, so, I mean, that one actually sounded really interesting, and I'm kind of sad to see that one actually getting removed.
So. Allegedly, there's confusion over whether some of these are completely gone or merely made optional.
Yeah. So, and the other thing I'm thinking is, I know Paz made a comment about making it easy, reducing the time it takes to get to Alltrade's Abbey, which is a good point, but also, that means that that reduces the total amount of time you spend with a specific character in the game, because that character does not make it to Alltrade's Abbey.
Or do
they? And never returns for the rest of the game. So, that's something else to consider. Especially since they may have done a major redesign on this character. There was one thing I realized last night, and I thought it was very funny. Between the Dragon Quest VII remake being announced and the Dragon Quest I and II remakes coming out at the end of October here, they've got all of the graphical elements necessary to remake Dragon Quest Monsters Caravan Heart at this point.
No.
But why?
So do you remember... Well, Dragon Quest Monsters Caravan Heart is it's the weird one out for Dragon Quest Monsters, but it stars a 10-year-old Kiefer from Dragon Quest VII, a 10-year-old Abbess of Alltrades, who canonically they have never met in the original game, and they are on a caravan of people and monsters going through what is very obviously the same world map as Dragon Quest II.
Why? Why?
I don't know why, but literally everything that they need to remake this game, they have had to have done to make these other remakes that they have that they are coming out with right now. So, I'm just like, it would be very funny if that's the next game that they announce, is a remake of Caravan Heart.
It'd be interesting if they did.
I'd like to see them remake it and go with my idea instead and make it... Wait, that would be spoilers for Dragon Quest VII, never mind.
No.
Yeah. You made it from Oceanus. Yep, anyway. So how's it going with that giant mutt? I've been able to break him free.
I was hoping he would, yes. One of my boons just became heroic. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, Dragon Quest VII tried something different with the plot organization, and it did not quite work for a lot of it. And a lot of what they could have done to improve it has already been done for the 3DS version, and first and foremost being that puzzle piece radar.
Yes.
Which really, really helped. They streamlined the opening section in the home island by about 50% at least. So the game actually starts being a game sooner. Apparently, Hori-san was greatly inspired by Myst when he was originally designing the...
Boy.
This explains a lot. This really does explain a lot. But just the puzzle brain puzzle adventure side of everything just didn't turn out very well.
There's no real puzzles.
Just finding puzzles.
I mean, puzzle as in the entire world is a puzzle that you're trying to figure out, not as actual puzzle.
I will say once again, there are two versions of this game that have like a million years of game in them. I'm interested in seeing, like, Hori and his teams aren't stupid. I'm interested in seeing what their ideas were for how to streamline this game and what ends up being cut, and if some of it ends up being just made optional. Okay, I wanted to hit some of these questions since they've been waiting in the chat, and then I will probably go to bed because I hit my head and I'm tired. earlier this year, Fireminer says, earlier this year I asked about the difficulty of making a new Princess Maker game. Well, the Korean company currently making the latest Princess Maker title just announced that their development team had all left the company, so they will have to transfer the job, making it to a third party. Just how many games have changed developer midway through and still got finished and released, much less being a good game? So some ones I can think of, this is kind of an edge case, but the 360 and PS3 Splatterhouse reboot technically switched development from Bottle Rocket Studios to an internal Bandai Namco company, although that company was primarily composed of former Bottle Rocket Studios developers. You usually see this with games that are mostly finished by the time they're over, by the time they switch. But I'm sure I had at least one other example I could think of off the top of my head for a game that switched developer in midstream and still came out. Sorry, give me a moment. I have to think about this. Wheels, distract them.
Mm-hmm. Baseball playoffs are starting this week.
Hooray for the AL ball. Go Mariners.
Good man that the Mariners don't have to play till later this week.
Hooray.
They won the division. Which is, in case you're wondering how rare that
is, a weird thing to say.
The last time that happened was, I believe, 2003?
It was 2001.
I think you're right, actually.
Yeah.
That was Ichiro's... Was that Ichiro's first year?
I think that was his first year in the U.S., yeah. Let's see.
Yeah, 2001. And I think they won like 115 games that year and bowed out very quickly from the playoffs.
Baseball is a fickle game.
Yes, yes.
You can have the best
RPG.
Yes, please.
You can have the best player in the world, and that person can still only be at bat 1 in 9 times.
Wheels, I just did the thing where I'm fighting the sirens, and I was able to resurrect the drummer to fight for me.
Oh, so good.
Yay!
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
I had something else lined up for this question, because, like, why on Earth would even my deranged brain have come up with Splatterhouse as the first example here? Um, Yeah, okay. There's another one that kind of counts. LA Noire was primarily developed by an Australian developer led by a dipshit that was called Team Bondi, and then like late in development because of said dipshit mismanagement, like Rockstar had to come in and largely finish the game themselves. Let's see. I remember back in the day, when Aliens Colonial Marines came out, it was like unclear how much of it Gearbox had made. I'm not sure if that number is zero. let's see, because we know that like some portion of it was contracted out, and like that's another thing that makes this question dicier, is that like nowadays a lot of games have like significant development support, and like I suppose in this case we would only be counting games that had entirely left behind their original development studio. Excuse me.
I mean, you could say things like Earthbound, where they had to hand it off to somebody else who completely rebuilt it.
Yeah, but that was still technically working with Ape.
I didn't like Earthbound.
It's one of those where you like it or you don't. It's, you know.
Yeah.
It's got its thing. It's got its people who love it. And that's all that's good. But, I mean, literally, the team that made it or was working on it originally, they could not get it to work properly. And so they called in, what's his face, the miracle guy at Nintendo. Brain not work.
Miyamoto
Iwata. Yeah, and he took a look at it and he said it would take him either this long to finish it or this long to completely just make it from the ground up, and it was a shorter to actually just make it from the ground up.
Okay.
And he went and did it. So
Iwata created Kirby.
Yeah. And this was obviously before he did something very similar to Pokemon Gold Silver. Mm.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not technically a match to the question, but an outsider who was brought in and a major change of development.
This is not... Hold on, I'm in a boss fight that is not even remotely fair. I'm sorry.
You'll be fine. Maybe. Probably not. You're dead already, aren't you?
No, it's a whole group of those snake ladies who have that ground laser thing that follows you.
That one's easy.
Okay, well, I've never seen it before, and I'm getting
just keep moving. You'll be
hurt.
It is not.
Oh.
Okay, so random non-game item. Have you seen the Reading Rainbow's coming back?
Again?
Reading Rainbow.
Is that a book?
Yep, they're bringing back.
No, you missed the fact that both Wheels and I said again.
No, I was the one that said again along with you.
Oh, Dave, I apologize, Dave.
Although, hey, I did contribute to the Kickstarter when it came back.
About 10
years ago.
First time, yeah. The
first time.
Okay.
10 years ago.
Well, when was the first time?
In like 2013.
Yep. Okay.
Butterfly in the sky. I can go twice. Where can I read a book, Gaijin?
Oh, nice pivot.
Nice, thank you. Okay, well, I mean, so if we're moving on to that, well, okay, for something that might actually halfway work on Reading Rainbow, we have Tanuki as a teapot, Japanese folktales all about animals in one way, shape, or another. Most of the animals even survive the story. That's nice.
I may have to read
except that one. Except that one Tanuki, he seriously deserved what he got. He knows what he did.
I may actually have to read that soon because I am almost out of One Piece.
Ah.
That is a terrifying statement.
I have one volume left. The next volume doesn't come out in the U.S. till November.
What number are they up to over there?
109.
Wow.
Okay, you got a while ago, yeah. Oh yeah, so yes, Tanuki is a Teapot by Michael Yarimizu, Yarimizu. Just short stories, retellings, cultural observations, just illustrations by yours truly, because nobody said I couldn't. Also by me, we have Princesses of the Pizza Parlor on Kindle and Kindle Unlimited. If you enjoyed playing tabletop role-playing games, if you wish you had more time playing them, if you enjoy living vicariously through seeing other people's poor dice rolls and poorer personal decisions, again, we have Princesses of the Pizza Parlor. It's currently 13 episodes, 5 side stories, 1 paralogue. I am aiming to finish up the main quest line this year, hopefully by the end of this year, end of January at the latest, and then eventually getting covers and everything. My personal publication plans are very busy for the next 12 months. This should be fun to watch. Also we have Vainglorious Long as the Night, which is my attempt at lit RPG. That would be speculative fiction where at least the trappings of video game logic and leveling systems are a major factor. It's up for very, very vigorous online debate exactly how far this genre stretches in any given direction. I prefer not to engage in that debate, but I'm also publishing a book that very much does try to push the envelope of what counts. So again, that's Vainglorious Long as the Night by Michael Yarimizu, Yarimizu. Again, available in print replica or reflowable text versions for ebook. Due to certain things that were required for me to keep certain formatting decisions in the ebook copy. There's some tricks that you can do that Amazon just doesn't like you to do if you're trying to put it in an ebook. Yes. Amazingly enough, putting words over kanji was the simplest thing in this. idiosyncratic non-alphanumeric symbols was a bit more difficult to work with. I had a lot of fun with that. I obviously do recommend the print version, especially since I specifically designed the cover to look like a Game Boy Advance Castlevania cover in anime style. If you've ever seen a Japanese Game Boy Advance box, those things are rectangles, not squares. And so the entire cover is set sideways to fit it properly. So it looks different. Again, why? Because I'm self-publishing and I could. Yes. Yeah. That will be the reason given for many, many of my publishing decisions over the next year. And going on with that, we have, under a different name, Michael Spearwater, which I'm surprised to find it actually is a cromulent surname, mostly in Britain. We have A Wager for Wanderlust, which it's a travelogue, it's a high fantasy travelogue, it's a romantasy. It is not suitable for the same audience I was aiming for with Princesses of the Pizza Parlor, which is why I'm using a different pen name.
I was about to say, but I didn't want to assume.
Yes.
No, I asked my in-laws very nicely if I could use their family name for a pen name, and they were very nice about it. I would not be the first husband in this family to take the wife's name in some way or another. But I did not want to risk embarrassing them by publishing something a little too racy under their name. So,
and that's what I figured.
Of their name instead. So,
yeah.
I said
Sam said that's what he figured.
Yeah. Yes.
And
working on publishing more items, in one case probably in full spite of a former publisher. This should be fun, from a legal standpoint. So I will probably have a few more items to talk about in coming months. Yeah. As it is right now, going by just ebooks, we're talking 19, 20, 21, 22 ebooks, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 paperbacks.
I don't know if you, I'm sure you've heard of Jim Butcher.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
He has done a similar thing with a pseudonym for a risque series he wrote.
Yeah.
That's how come I knew where you were going with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, no, I mean, it was just something I considered. I mean, this particular book, it was a National Novel Writing Month challenge to myself to see if I could actually do something like this. And I had a lot of fun with the world building, and it turned out to be a bit longer than I expected. And, all fun. But, I figured, you know, I'll just see what I can do with this, and it is not going to be under the same name. And, probably going to put a couple other books under that name as well, just for stuff that has, like, too much cussing or other stuff for the main audience, so. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, all my stuff. Go, check it out, have fun. Enjoy. Somebody please leave a rating or review. I like to see those.
Okay.
Yeah.
Joe, tell us about your streaming.
Yes, so I am currently a streamer for rpgamer.com. So every Tuesday and Thursday night, give or take, you can catch me on twitch.tv/rpgamer. I've been playing Rune Factory, Guardians of Azuma. So I usually start around 10 o'clock on Tuesdays, 9 o'clock on Thursdays. Of course, that's Eastern time. And they are supposed to send me a copy of Pokemon Legends ZA to stream when that becomes available. So I'm very excited, and thank you to Paws and Chris and everybody else. Nuo, yeah, everybody. Our bosses are good bosses, aren't they? We like them.
We love them.
Yeah,
we love our bosses.
Paws is the boss, yeah. So I'm going to be doing that. And, well, this was supposed to be Sega Tembra, but I actually didn't spend much time playing Sega games, although it's spooky season in another day, so we're going into spooky Hallowstream, so you may see me on my own Twitch channel and my own YouTube channel, which is Smoke and Joe Gamer, and so I might do some spooky streams or some Resident Evil speedruns, something to that effect. You can definitely tune in for that. And I guess RP Gamer is going to be doing Extra Life, and I think I'm lined up to play some Tetris because they're going to let us play non-RPGs, and I thought, hey, I could play that for 2 hours. Why not? So stay tuned for that. I think that's November 8th, I want to say.
I think you've signed up for the 8th.
Okay. Excellent. So it'll be fun. So definitely check that out, and tune into the streams. They're trying to come up with some kind of donation incentives. I don't know what they're going to be, but don't know, maybe you'll have a chance to make me play a version of Tetris I don't like. I guess we'll see. So how stay much, tuned for that.
You still haven't told me how much I have to donate to force you to play Fortnite with.
I don't know. It hasn't. Nothing's been ironed out yet, and I'm never playing Fortnite for all the money in the world.
But it's for the kids, Joe. It's for the kids.
Screw them.
Why are you doing the stream, then?
But no, it's... Oh, yeah, that's right. It's... All right, raising money for cancer for children.
No, yes. No. Raising... It's not just cancer. It's...
Okay.
Raising money for children's hospitals.
Okay.
Just... there are certain ones that network with the Children's Miracle Network, and the donations can go to those various hospitals and to help them get stuff they need.
Okay, good. Yeah, I've never done it before, so I wasn't sure of all the details, but yeah, I'll be streaming.
Some of these children's hospitals do deal with cancer, but some of them also deal with other things like children who have special autoimmune disorders or other things of that nature. So they're cystic fibrosis, a whole bunch of things.
Okay, good. That's good to know. But definitely tune in for that. And no, so I will not play Fortnite under any circumstances. I'm sorry. Sorry, kids, but but you can watch me play Pokemon on the RP Gamer channel.
Yay.
Pokemon.
I'm just happy this year my 8-hour stream is not secretly a 9-hour stream.
Hooray.
That's good.
I guess.
The last few years, I pulled the overnight stream on Sunday, which is daylight savings. So it's a 9-hour stream.
That's awful. Oh, no.
So
this year is just a straight 8-hour stream.
Woohoo.
So far we've actually gotten most of the schedule ironed out with almost no one but our stream team, except for a little bit with Noodle and Nick. So, and looks like we're going like all day this year. So, really excited. Because I'm the Mighty Tam. I am also part of the stream team. I'm also community management, basically making sure people behave on the Discord. So, but you can catch me Saturday and Sunday evenings. And I am currently playing the second Super Robot Wars Original Generations.
Ooh.
Not to be confused with Super Robot Wars Original Generations 2.
Wait, you know what? No. I have no
questions. I told you I could dissertate.
I have no questions on this matter.
yeah, just don't. It's a whole thing, Wheels. I could spend hours on this subject. I will not right now. But people can come ask me when I stream, because I have no problem discussing it as I stream. Although, because the second is only in Japanese, I am reading a full translation that someone did of their own free will, line by line, of the entire game.
Wow.
It's not perfect, but do you actually want to see this, Michael?
No.
Sure.
Which Michael?
That Michael.
Oh, God.
You have to be more specific, dude. Not
Wars.
Gaijin.
Yes. There's a reason why we mostly go by handles on this podcast. Yep.
Let's just get this done.
So, anyone else got anything we still need to plug?
Shenanigans, Sunday night stream.
1 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern. They didn't hit E3 yesterday. I was busy.
I'm not sure what we're going to play next week. We are going to play Kirby Air Riders in the future. Is that a remake or is it a new game? I don't even know.
It's a sequel.
Okay. That's not for a while yet, though, so...
Arcades and
whatnot. We'll play something.
Indeed, not.
We'll all play Yooka-Laylee replay when that comes out.
Oh yeah,
that'll be fun.
I think I'm just gonna get that on Steam because they're gonna give me a discount because I have the original.
Coward. I don't know why you're a coward.
Okay. And then but you are you can ask. You can ask us questions if you catch us when we're streaming, which starts more around 8:30 to 9 Pacific, midnight Eastern, Monday nights. You can also you can also ask us questions in the Discord. If you're not part of the RP Gamer Discord, you can go to rpgamer.com, click the community tab. You can put questions in the podcast section. We always appreciate those. You can also ask questions in the comments section under this very episode if Wheel remembers to put it up in time. But we usually check the last few episodes. But otherwise, that's about it for us. Go away, I'm not your dad.
Oh my god. Good night.
Bye, everybody.
All right, goodbye, guys.